What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome everyone to Waveform Episode 5. So if you're a little confused, yes, this is the third episode in 3 weeks, three in a row.
And if you aren't confused, that probably means you missed episode 4, as it was a special unscheduled episode, which also means you're probably not following us on Twitter. We're not mad.
We're just disappointed, that's all. Anyway, we're your hosts. I'm Marquez Brownlee.
And I'm Andrew Manganelli.
And on this episode, we're going to go over the ongoing Tesla versus Porsche saga. And then we'll dive a little deeper into iPhone 11 Pro. And then we might as well just go ahead and do our own Pixel 4 launch event because the internet has leaked basically everything. Then we'll hit on some OnePlus rumors and we'll finish it off with a Q&A. Let's get into it. All right, so we've actually dropped 5 new videos since our last scheduled episode of Waveform.
Yeah, I mean, we had an unscheduled one in there, so a lot of the videos we've pretty much talked about, but...
Yeah, but it's that time of year, man. It's about to be full swing. We call it hardware season. We can call it tech season, tech-tember, tech-tober. No matter what you call it, it's underway.
It's about to be lit, as they say.
So one of those was the Galaxy Fold video. So we had sort of a short overview of the fixes they had for the reinforced re-release. You could call it the Galaxy Fold 1.1. A lot of minor things. You might not even notice them if you hadn't seen the original Galaxy Fold. But in the video, we went over the little caps at the end of the phone and the little more rigid hinge. But overall, it's generally the same idea, same phone, same screen, same specs. But hopefully doesn't break on day one for people. Maybe takes... a little longer than that.
Yeah, I think they were so proud about showing that robot that folded it like 10,000 times, but I just really think they underestimated how much human nature were just ready to just fuck shit up. Like,
I think that's just what happens when you test a phone in a vacuum and you don't really do a whole ton of outside the lab testing. Yeah. And most of this was because they wanted to keep it a secret, which they successfully did. Mm-hmm. But then you have people testing it for the first time, which are reviewers and people trying to publish what they find about it, and they just start breaking in ways that they didn't account for. So hopefully this one doesn't do the same thing. I actually kind of have a feeling, and I mentioned it in the video, that these are still going to break. Yeah. Like, it's still a fragile phone, and the number one thing I think is going to break, if I were to make a prediction right now, if I was betting, the thing that's going to break for regular people who actually buy this is the screen, just the soft plastic front of it.
It's way too soft.
Yeah, so the hinge might not be a problem anymore because they did reinforce that, but I think that soft plastic is still a little bit of a barrier for it.
Yeah, I think one of the reviewers that broke it was mentioning how their fingernails started to cut into it, and I think in the video we show that when you open it up now, it tries to tell you to tap it lightly, but as much as it probably also tells you not to drop the phone, but everyone drops their phone, so it's going to happen. You're going to tap the screen. It's going to start breaking. How long would you give it?
Well, someone's going to break it on day one because Zach's going to get his.
Okay, I can't wait for that. I think he's going to have to order 10 of them.
That teardown is going to be fun to watch. Yeah. But it's out there now, and people are going to start to use them, and people are going to spend $1,980 and get their folding phone. And that's, on one hand, really exciting that we live in that world now, that people are going to start buying and using folding phones. But on the other hand, yeah, still a fragile phone. But that it's out there now. We've shown the update. You guys can take the risk if you want, but there's, of course, plenty of choice. And then we also showed this week the Asus ROG Phone 2. It's the spec king, and we've seen this on paper. This phone, if you've watched the video, you already know it's a sort of a small design iteration from last year, but the specs are sick. It's a Snapdragon A55 Plus, which is the highest end non-Apple made silicon. It's 12 gigs of fast RAM. It is up to a terabyte, and this is gonna be available later this year. You can have a half a terabyte now, but up to a terabyte of UFS 3.0 storage, which is fast storage. That's already an insane spec sheet. Then on top of that, you have a 6,000 milliamp hour battery. That's the biggest battery I've ever used in a phone. You also have a headphone jack, you have a 48 megapixel main camera, and you have a 120 hertz OLED display on the front. So it's got a lot going for it on paper. The question was just, does it translate well to real life? Mm-hmm.
Everyone in our comments forever has been saying, well, duh, specs.
they usually do translate pretty well. I mean, something that is a perfect translator is battery.
Oh, yeah.
Unless you're comparing an iPhone to an Android phone, pretty much among all Android phones, you can get a pretty good idea. If it says 2800 milliamp hours and it's got a giant high refresh rate screen, it's not going to last very long. Mm-hmm. If it's a 6000 milliamp hour battery, it's just going to last a much longer time. So this phone, I don't want to spoil anything, but I feel like this one's a lock for battery champ of 2019. Yeah,
we've talked about this. We've talked about a couple of smartphone award things, and it's hard to, but I can't see this one losing.
I can't see it losing battery. I'm also thinking it's probably up for best big phone of the year, mm-hmm. just because when you think of like an actually great use of space, the phone is not over, it's huge, right? But it's not overly cumbersome and impossible to use, uh-huh. and they managed to stuff like everything you could possibly put in a phone in it. So possible best use of big space too. This is a good phone. It's under the radar.
Yeah.
But there are
a couple issues with bands in the US, right?
Right. Yeah, the US versions are coming later and they're actually, I think, like I said, the terabyte version isn't shipping for a couple more weeks, but I think when it does get to the US, people will find it a pretty great option.
I'll be super excited the first time I see one of them out in the wild.
It's not my daily driver anymore though.
No. No. Oh.
I switched back to the OnePlus 7 Pro.
Okay.
And the biggest thing I miss from the Asus ROG Phone 2 is the gigantic battery, but the biggest advantage of the OnePlus 7 Pro is the warp charging. So yeah. I actually, you know, I do find myself running through battery a bit faster. Instead of being at 60% around today, like this mm-hmm. time of day, I'd be at like 40%, but I'll just plug in on the car ride home and I'll be back up to like 70, 80, 90.
Yeah.
And I'm good.
We're definitely in the world where someone has a charger almost everywhere. So yeah. It is really easy to not have to last a day, but it definitely, that 6,000 milliamp hour battery is nice to like, I'm not that worried about fast charging if I know literally the only time I have to plug it in is when I go to bed at night.
Honestly, it changed the way I used chargers, that phone. Like every phone I pretty much ever use, I'm constantly thinking about when am I going to be able to plug in. Maybe it's a bit unhealthy, but like that's just what I'm thinking about. This phone, I was like, all right, it's the biggest battery I've ever used. Let's see how good it really is. I'm going to decide to use it extra hard, and I'm going to not charge it even when I can. So on the way to work, I just have a car charger like sitting there waiting to plug in uh-huh. for my GPS. And I just put it right next to the charger and I didn't plug it in. And I just went the whole day without ever plugging anything in. And yeah, like you saw in the video, I was ending the day with like half battery left. That's after nuts. Just crushing it. So yeah, that phone it's great. But I did end up switching back because I'm a bit more of a fan of the Oxygen OS experience and 90 hertz versus 120. Have you looked at the 120 hertz display?
Just a tad, not too much. And I'm also I'm using a Pixel 3, so I'm not used to really having my high refresh rate on my phone. Sorry.
Okay,
so
you're,
I'm ready.
You're ready for a high refresh rate screen.
I'm so ready.
I could kind of, sort of tell the difference between 120 hertz and 90, mm-hmm. and I can definitely tell the difference between 90 and 60.
Yeah.
Major difference.
I think that's the bigger jump. I think we've talked about it before.
Oh, a lot, yeah. This is my biggest gripe with the new Note is like, everything's great about that phone, but I can see the difference between 60 and 90. And if the Note 10 was a 90 hertz display, I would have loved that thing. I probably would still be using it.
Yeah. Would you be? So every year I feel like I work here, I've always found you go back and forth between OnePlus and Pixel. That usually once you get into a daily driver thing, Samsung sneaks in sometimes, but
yeah,
I'm so used to you using OnePlus because it's so fast.
Definitely
than
the last
being
two
mad
years.
About camera going back to one, but Google, but I can confirm here that he's been using OnePlus for a very long time.
Yeah. And so the OnePlus 7 Pro came out in March or something like that, March or April, and it's been more or less my primary Android phone since then. I'll test other phones and I'll end up going back to it. Yeah, mm-hmm. since then.
Probably the longest I've seen you with one phone that wasn't being tested before switching, which is saying a lot.
I think the real driver for that is it was first to 90 hertz, and every time I had to switch back to another phone, it was a phone that didn't have 90 hertz, and that's just what it came down to. But we're gonna have a bunch more options later this year, so that's exciting.
That's very exciting.
Anyway, we also have all of our iPhone videos this week, but we'll touch up on that a little bit later. Do you have any videos or some content you've thought was worth sharing specifically in the last 2 weeks?
Yeah. Since we're on a podcast, why not talk about a podcast? And why not talk about a podcast from another creator?
Perfect.
Yeah. So two people we love, Phil DeFranco and Casey Neistat, they joined in on Phil DeFranco's podcast episode, A Convo With, I think is the title.
I like it. So he's doing a video podcast, but also distributing it like an audio podcast. Mm-hmm. But if you want to like watch the video version, it's usually a pretty good like extra bit to see the people talk.
The video is cool. Like, I don't think you're missing anything, but the set for one is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's really well done. It's cutting back and forth really nicely. They have a great setup, but I just really enjoyed, I feel like so many people get Casey on and it's so easy to just talk about his daily vlogging and everything, but Phil and them have talked so many times that they went a lot deeper into just what his life is like outside of being a creator. And
now that he's an LA kid.
Yeah, Phil keeps calling him a former YouTube star.
now
which
that
is
he's
hilarious.
Not daily vlogging. Yeah.
There's one story in particular about how it's tough as a creator to talk poorly about things, and how he had this video where he was gonna like expose this restaurant that he really likes when it wasn't really that bad, but it's just this hilarious story about how he knows so much about maple syrup and he ordered this $12 waffle that had maple syrup, pure maple syrup, and
waffle.
He knew it wasn't pure maple syrup, and he all these tests to prove that it wasn't maple syrup, and he was about to release the video and he felt too bad about the restaurant.
That's such a Casey video though.
I know it sounds hilarious. I wish I could see it.
I just pictured him like slamming a jar of syrup down on the top down set and like shoving a meter into it to measure the sugar content. That's hilarious.
Yeah,
I know. I'll definitely. I saw part of it. I haven't watched the whole thing yet, but
it's worth it. Just a lot of really fun stories.
Nice.
Yeah.
I also got a little piece. So John Rettinger, another tech YouTuber who's done a lot of great stuff. He's been on a rampage of these incredibly thoughtful, not necessarily reviews, but just like thought pieces about the tech world lately.
Yeah.
And his big one, which was cinematographically. It was shot really well. His last video was what if there was no iPhone 11, but mainly just like what if Apple went bankrupt at in any of the points in history where they were close to getting like really put under.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple, you know, major points in history he goes over in that video that are just fascinating to think about. I did cameo in this video, so maybe I'm a little biased. If you watch that intro, I'm in there. But it's a great piece to just sort of ponder. You know, what would have happened if Apple wasn't the most powerful company in the world right now?
Yeah, it's like story based, which is really cool because we don't see that in this tech niche that much. And it's just great to have a breath of fresh air on something a little different. And yes, it shot beautifully. Is that like an Airbnb that like 70s?
All kinds of sets.
Oh man, that like refrigerator and stuff and everything just looked
set design incredible. Goes a long way. I also want to say like I've been immersed in that world of retro tech for the past couple months now that we've been shooting it, and I'm definitely not going to spoil what it is, but one of the episodes has a lot to do with a lot of what John talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And the storytelling and just that story in general about that period in time with Apple is really fascinating, so go check that out. And a little plug for Retro Tech coming in December, which is just what, two short months away now. It's coming up.
It's gonna feel like in a week when we're just
you're gonna be watching a bunch of modern tech videos, and then suddenly, boom, retro tech right at the end of the year. It's gonna be great. Okay, well, yeah, that's a good little two-setter for content to check out for the last 2 weeks. Here's what I want to talk about.
I'm sure you do.
Here's what I want to talk about: Porsche versus Tesla, Part 2.
Okay.
So we went over. You guys, you were probably listening to the last episode of the podcast where we talked about Porsche Taycan, and I'm trying to say it correctly now. Porsche Taycan is the way I'm supposed to be saying it.
I keep saying Taycan.
Taycan.
And I say Porsche.
Taycan.
On habit.
Porsche. But we all saw that announcement, and I don't even know if I can say that they technically took any shots at Tesla on stage, but everybody knew that every time they compared themselves to, air quotes, the competition,
mm-hmm.
they were talking about Tesla Model
S. Wasn't the Chevy Volt.
It wasn't the Chevy Volt. Man. They didn't really make any Nissan Leaf jabs on stage. They were kind of going squarely at their high performance cousin. So that happened, and you know, there's kind of silence, and there's a little bit of, you know, people tagging Elon like, hey, what do you got to say about Porsche? And I think he did say something like, yeah, why'd you put turbo in the name? I don't think that word means what you think it means. obviously in this electric car battle. But of course, the competitive nature of a competitive CEO just couldn't stay inside, and he had to start making moves. And I'm sure a lot of this was hush-hush for a while, but now they're officially working on some new hardware for Tesla, and I would probably call this a refresh.
Yeah.
To take on the Taycan, to make moves. So here's where I'll start. Porsche was bragging about their lap time about the Nürburgring, right?
Mm-hmm.
13-mile track, something like that. Very, very long lap. Difficult for an electric car to lap without coolant kicking in and limiting performance. So they set their record around the Nürburgring, and a lot of people turn their heads back to Tesla like, yeah, well, what are you gonna do? Like, the Porsche is gonna be better at driving around tracks than you.
Yeah, we talked about it in the episode where we talked about this, that yeah. Tesla hasn't been able to do it because it's a grueling track.
Yeah, and a huge car.
Yeah.
So Elon tweets that the Model S is going to the Nürburgring. Okay, like a lot of people don't realize this about these track runs is you don't just show up in your car and just go and time yourself. Like this is an officially timed thing. You hire a professional driver who knows the course well so that he can set your optimal lap time. If you go look at the best lap times around, I think it's both Laguna Seca and Nürburgring, but if you look at Laguna Seca's top like 30 lap times, mm-hmm. about 15 or 20 of them are set by the same one guy.
Oh, really?
In a bunch of different cars, which is fascinating because this person knows the ins and outs of that track. So these race car drivers are hired to go drive and set the best possible lap time in that car. So Elon tweets this, Model S going to Nürburgring next week. And then a bunch of articles come out afterwards like, Tesla doesn't have a reservation or any sort of setup or scheduling to actually do this. So if they're doing a record run, Nürburgring doesn't know about it, which is kind of a perfectly Elon thing to happen.
Oh, yeah.
But then shortly thereafter, the shorter track called Laguna Seca. Am I saying that right? I'm going to just mispronounce a lot of things during this.
I think Laguna's right.
All right. Well, so Laguna Seca is a shorter track. It's about a minute and a half to lap, maybe up to 2 minutes. And he shows a Model S lapping Laguna Seca in a record for a four-door car, 1 minute, 36 seconds. The tweet is actually from the Tesla account this time. And let me actually read the tweet because we were in the airport when this tweet came up, and I've been sort of just on the fence about whether or not Tesla is going to refresh their cars. And then I saw this in my timeline. So let me read it. So the tweet is, some personal news. We've lapped Laguna Seca in 1 minute 36.555 seconds during advanced R&D testing of our Model S Plaid powertrain and chassis prototype. That's 1 second faster than the record for a four-door sedan. And you can see this video
from
the driver's perspective and through the front of the car. And if you squint, you can see there's a Model 3 steering wheel on this car, and there's a driver in a helmet, assuming not his first lap, but doing this crazy fast lap. And I'm reading this, and I'm like, what is a Plaid powertrain and a chassis prototype? What's going on
here? This is when we were sitting in the Austin airport because San Francisco is a nightmare to fly out of right
Absolutely
now.
Absolutely wrecked.
Yeah, so we're just like completely exhausted sitting in this airport. Marquez is like, wait, they just did Laguna Seca? Wait.
What's
it's a
going
Model
on?
3 steering wheel? Wait, yeah. What is this weird badge on the back? Like,
There's a lot of questions raised from that. I tweeted at them. I didn't get any answers, but I'm like, what is a Plaid powertrain? Is this different from my current powertrain? Turns out when you look into it, so during the Roadster reveal, which was really the semi-truck reveal, but the Roadster reveal of the new Roadster, they talked about the Plaid powertrain being triple motors. Two motors in the back, one in the front for the Roadster. That's how it goes Plaid, which is just another word for faster than ludicrous mode.
Yeah, it's absurdly a Spaceballs fast. Reference if you're not aware of it.
So I see all these tweets and I start looking up, and it turns out there's rumors that there's a Model S with a Plaid triple motor powertrain, and they're testing this triple motor Model S with an updated sort of racing style, not racing style, but a slightly modified chassis that will eventually be a spec that you can buy. So this is, I'm going to say this is a direct response to Porsche. Like, I can't like verify any of this. None of this is directly referencing Porsche. But once you have the shot fired of the Taycan and the lap times and this being the clear, obvious advantage for the Porsche, and then Tesla comes back with their still much cheaper car, but them saying, hey, look, we're going to do lap times now, and we're going to set records with our lap times. And I think even some people were tweeting at Elon trying to get more information about it. And he said something about this is going to be faster than but cheaper than the competition. He didn't say what, quote, the competition is, but I'm going to say that's the Porsche. So yeah. I think we have competition to thank for this.
For sure. I'm sure they've been developing it, obviously, for a while, but it's way too coincidental that the laps start coming out right here. So
this is perfect timing. Yeah. So there's actually some spy shots of, I guess some people took some telephoto shots through a fence of what they saw was some testing of what was going on. So sort of behind the scenes of that Tesla tweet of advanced R&D testing. And there's a red Tesla Model S, looks like a normal Model S at first, but if you squint a little bit, on the back they have a P100D Plus badge, which is kind of weird because they stopped using the P100D name. They just put dual motor and performance on the back now, but P100D Plus, so that would assume better than the current P100D, but still 100 kilowatt hour battery, I guess. And it's got a bit of a bigger spoiler for more downforce. It's got a bigger air intake right above the front splitter, the front. Much bigger. And it's got these big tires on the back, and I'm assuming a slightly lighter chassis, but big, big tires that sort of flare out on the back for better traction. So this is a full-on new plaid spec for Model S. And to top it all off, Elon tweeted, and this is a sort of a good news, bad news situation.
Yeah.
He tweeted that it's coming up at the end of next year, October, November, 2020. And here's my theory, and I hate that this is the theory, but it's probably true. We were kind of all assuming the Roadster 2020 was delayed. It wasn't coming out in 2020. Now we pretty much know it's not. It's coming out after the Plaid Model S and Model X.
That's confirmed because didn't he reply to one of your tweets that Roadster would be after Plaid Model Train?
Plaid powertrain? Yeah, so there's going to be a Model S and Model X that get a certain, slightly more expensive, but still less expensive than Porsche, Plaid powertrain. That will be at the end of next year, and then Roadster Plaid powertrain will come after that, which means if they're starting production at the end of next year, I don't expect to see Roadster at all in 2020. Yeah. So
unless it sneaks in December just to spite you.
Yeah.
Which is go ahead, Elon, spite him. I'm sure he won't mind.
Please spite me. Please ruin my prediction and come out at the end of 2020. But yeah, I don't expect that. So there's all kinds of crazy back and forth happening now with Porsche and Tesla. There's also rumors that Tesla finally did circuit the Nürburgring. And this is purely rumors at this point. I don't think there's any sort of confirmation, but so the record time set by the Taycan was 7 minutes and 42 seconds. The rumored time set by the Plaid Model S was 7 minutes, 23 seconds. So that's 20 seconds faster, which is not a small amount of time for an improvement. So that's just generally great for electric cars to be making strides this quickly forward. It's bad news that the Roadster is delayed, but also he's tweeted that it's definitely, I think he said absolutely, going to beat the all-time record for a production car around the Nürburgring, which is like 6 minutes and 44 seconds or something wild like that. So yeah. I mean, just a jumbling of good news and bad news all in the name of competition. I'm just happy the competition's pushing things forward.
But sad you're losing Roadster for possibly another year.
Yeah, I think I'd already kind of given up hope. So it doesn't hit me as hard as it would have if this was the first time I'd suspected it was delayed. But yeah, it's just a whole spiral of news. That's all right.
So now that you've dug yourself into the delayed Roadster depression, let's talk about some phones before you get too sad.
Sure.
So do you want to let everyone know how the iPhone's treating you and then maybe dive into this swimming pool filled by Pixel 4 leaks?
Yes, let's get into that right after this break. Support for Waveform comes from Coda. So are you having trouble getting your remote team organized and on the same page? Or for that matter, is your own desktop looking a little chaotic with a lot of tools and tabs? If any of that sounds familiar, then you may be interested in Coda. So Coda is an all-in-one collaborative workspace designed to bring teams and tools together for a more organized workday. So Coda blends the flexibility of docs, the structure of spreadsheets, and the power of applications, and the intelligence of AI to make work, well, less work.
So with Coda's extensive planning capabilities, you can stay aligned by managing your planning cycles in one location while setting and measuring objectives for key results with full visibility across teams. Plus, you can access hundreds of templates and get inspired by others in Coda's gallery. So if you want a platform that empowers your team to collaborate effectively and focus on shared goals, you can get started with Coda today for free. So you can head over to coda.io/wave, that's coda.io/wave, to get started for free. So coda.io/wave.
Beloved brands know customer relationships are everything. That's why over 130,000 trust Klaviyo to power smarter digital relationships across their websites, emails, SMS, and reviews. And now there's Klaviyo AI, your guide to smarter insights, decisions, work, and results. Brands like Everyman Jack trust Klaviyo AI to personalize product recommendations that keep customers coming back. Discover Klaviyo AI at klaviyo.com/box. That's klaviyo.com/box.
All right, we're back. So iPhone 11 Pro, this was the latest. We saw a couple iPhone videos in the past couple weeks. The first impressions of the iPhone 11, the iPhone 11 Pro, the unboxings of the green, and the reviews live. You still like the green now that you've seen it in person?
I don't like it as much,
really?
Surprisingly.
Okay.
I'm sure a lot of people, when we did the last podcast, were like, bullshit, Andrew, you've seen the green, but we were waiting to save it for an unboxing, so I actually didn't open it and didn't get to see it. It's much less green than I thought. And even like the video we made, it's so hard to tell what it actually looks like until you see it in person, because it changes based on lighting and whatnot. It's definitely leaning way more gray than green from what I was expecting.
Yeah, you can't really put too much. I mean, a lot of people are just going to put a case on it anyway, so whatever. But yeah, it does. It's one of those finishes that looks different in different lights. Comes off a little more gray sometimes, comes off a little more green. But the iPhone 11 Pros are in. The reviews are in. The focus of the phone is pretty much the camera. That's the main thing that we're focusing on. That's a pun, by the way.
Yeah,
I'm just going to keep saying it over
intended.
And over. So that was the focus of the review, is the camera. That's our focus. The camera, it's the focus. Okay, anyway. So I think the main question that pretty much everyone has is, are these cameras the best in any phone now? Are they better than the Pixel? Are they better than Samsung? Are they better than Huawei? For me, in daylight, I mean, you can watch the review, but I think in daylight, this takes the best photos now of any smartphone. I think it's sort of a coin flip if it's actually better than the Pixel sometimes in regular standard daylight, but it's pretty much A+ quality. And then you get into lower light and the night mode is where things begin to stratify again. And I think you can basically, you can tell now, and I think, oh man, the night mode sort of bracket that we do of the blind smartphones is going to be really interesting.
Yeah.
Because they are much more different from each other at night. The Pixel at night really tends to over-exaggerate bringing things into light. It'll basically turn night into day.
Okay.
It'll turn the black sky a little brighter into blue. It'll crank every light it possibly can and saturate everything. And it's this really dramatic, crazy photo. And the effect is really cool. But the iPhone, on the other hand, is doing a much more, I guess, responsible job of not blowing out every sort of detail. It's mainly just combining these longer exposures to make things more visible and more detailed, and not crank up the sharpness and detail and saturation.
Yeah, so it still feels like a nighttime photo rather than...
Exactly. So, I mean, if you put them side by side, you're going to say, oh, the Pixel, it's just way brighter on the Pixel. It's clearly done a better job with night mode. But the more you pixel peep and inspect, you can do crazy stuff by editing the iPhone's photo, which some people are into. But there's all sorts of other preferences people may have. So I'm going to leave that up to the blind smartphone camera test when we actually get to it. But I think the difference between these cameras is more apparent in night mode, and in daytime, you know, especially in videos, this thing takes amazing 4K videos. I have not taken any slow motion selfies yet.
Say it.
I don't want to. I'm not gonna say it. But yeah, that's where we're at so far with the cameras. So it's been pretty great. I highly advise watching the review. That's where the opinions are.
So I think we have a couple pixel leaks to talk about. A couple.
Like one or two photos, some blurry photos.
One article title was, here are 21 more photos of the Google Pixel 4. I think I'm enjoying pixel leaks just because of the titles of articles at this point.
It's pretty funny. This sort of leak versus promo culture that we're in, like right at this very moment, especially with the Pixel, is fascinating to me. Like, if you look back, so yes, the Pixel, you remember the Pixel 3 leaks?
Yeah.
That phone leaked so much, you basically didn't have to go on stage and say anything. You could just go, yep, here's the price, bye. Like, they didn't actually have to do any announcement.
And there's no Pixel 3 Ultra.
Yeah, they could have just done that, and we would have been like, all right, confirmed, everything is true. And it kind of feels like that waterfall of leaks has been surpassed yet again with Pixel 4.
But in a much stranger way this year, I feel like. The one thing that kind of confused everyone is when we first started getting those little bit of leaks,
mm-hmm.
Google's just like, oh, here you go. This is what it looks like. And just it was back in June they tweeted about it.
So there was the rumors of the quad camera back or the camera square on the back.
Yeah.
And they just went, you know what? Here's a picture. This is the back of the phone. Now use this image for the rest of your talking about the phone. This is it.
Mm-hmm.
And we went, wow, that's crazy. Google's embracing the leak culture by leaking it themselves. That's not what's happening, but okay, we'll just go with that. But now we've seen a literal, like a 10-minute Vietnamese unboxing and review video of the entire phone a month before it comes out.
Yes, it quieted down a bunch. I wonder if people just weren't looking. I don't know. We just didn't have that many leaks. And then I think I talked about article titles before. 9to5 Google has these. I'm going to read two article titles that are like 6 days apart. Number one. Fewer leaks and far less hype. Is it bad for the Google Pixel 4? That was September 6th. On September 13th, actually, I think Google Pixel 4 has leaked enough now. Thanks.
That's less than a week later. Yeah. Oh my God.
I don't know what happened. Whatever dam was holding back the leaks didn't just start leaking more. Fucking Michael Bay came in and blew it the hell up.
Yeah. The doors are off, man. Everything you need to know about the phone, the design, the way it looks, the features, looks like we know it's 90 hertz, the Android 10 feature-specific stuff, like the coral colorway. I actually love that there was, there's so many leaks now, you just sort of read a headline and you're like, oh, now we know something new about the phone. There was a headline about how Google has confirmed the coral color of the phone in a Times Square ad, and you're like, all right, we knew there was a coral color. Google just puts a picture of the phone in Times Square on a billboard. And we kind of riffed back and forth on that on Twitter for a little bit. Like, Google accidentally just reveals everything about the phone before it comes out. Like, Google talks about, Neil's reply was Google accidentally reveals Pixel 5 on stage during Pixel 4 event. Yeah, they didn't exactly do a great job. Do you think this is intentional? That's my question.
Honestly, no, but like, I don't blame people for thinking it is. I mean, you have a bunch of leaks that come out right around the Apple event. It's
hard. You would like to think that that's intentional, but I'm gonna go ahead and say it. I don't think it is.
I honestly don't. I think anyone who can plan that well would probably put more than 6 gigs of RAM in the Pixel 4. But no.
Oh, okay. So here's what I think. They tried to do one thing and it ended up being another thing. So the Pixel leaked a lot last year. So they probably went behind the scenes and they were like, all right, guys, the phone's gonna start to leak. And then what we're going to do is we're going to be these social geniuses and we're going to just start embracing leak culture and leaking the phone ourselves and posting promo images. And that'll get people hyped and it'll be perfect and it'll go hand in hand. And at the event, we'll make some joke on stage about how you might have seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll go great. Everyone will love it. And then everything about the phone leaked before they got to say anything. And I think what they were trying to do is kind of what OnePlus does. If you've noticed the past, I think like three generations of phones now, OnePlus basically says everything about their phone before it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
But they do this sort of a slow dribble of like one spec at a time every couple of days. And they'll give an official source, like their CEO or their official account will just tweet or say a new spec or a new thing to keep people talking about the phone.
Yeah, it keeps it in the cycle.
Exactly. It keeps it on your mind. It keeps it in the headlines. One day you'll see OnePlus 7 Pro will have a higher or something about a smooth focus. And you're like, ooh, I think that means it's going to be higher refresh rate. Oh, interesting. Cool. And then the next day they'll be like, oh, it'll have up to 12 gigs of RAM. And now there's a new article about how the OnePlus 7 Pro might have 12 gigs of RAM. Then the next day they're like, we have a special charging solution. And you're like, ooh, I wonder what that is. And you just keep talking about the phone and talking about the phone. I think that's probably what Google would have wanted to do with Pixel 4. And they had, you know, that little ad that they shared a video of like a gesture of like swiping on, like, kind of what LG did, like waving her hand in front of the phone. I bet they plan on sharing that once something about the top bezel leaked. They would have been like, trust me, it's for a good reason. But dude, everything, it's so out there now. You can't hide anything.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing that they coordinated some Vietnamese channel to get the phones and do entire, like, we're at a whole nother level where we're not just getting, what was it last year? Wasn't it like someone in Russia got a bunch of like black market prototypes of it?
It kind of almost did go this far. I remember there was actually there were multiple reviews of the phone in other languages before the phone actually came out. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was a month before the phone came out. We're really a month before the phone's supposed to be.
I remember released. Some like quick videos. Whatever this Vietnamese channel is, I don't know who they are, but they know what they're doing. These are sit down, framed up videos with a purpose, and they're just reviewing the phone, and we're getting to look through all the settings.
Man, I remember back in my day, leaks were just a half resolution blurry photo of the back of someone's hand. I remember it was an insane, insane story that someone left an iPhone in a bar. One iPhone, and they got the cops called on them, and it was a whole dramatic deal, and it involved a whole company getting blacklisted, and now it's just outpour, just a constant downpour. It's basically like standing in the rain. If leaks in 2009 were like a faucet leaking a little bit of water, just when you thought you turned it off, but there's a little bit extra going through, the leaks for a new phone in September 2019 are like standing outside in the rain with no jacket on and just getting dumped on. So speaking of leaks, I think one of the most curious things we're trying to figure out with this new Pixel that hasn't already been leaked is this new camera system. I've mentioned this before, pretty much everyone now has an ultra-wide camera, and up until the last month, it was just Apple and Google as the main big ones that didn't have an ultra-wide. So now that Apple has an ultra-wide, what's the rumor on the Pixel's camera system?
I don't think so. I still don't think so.
No ultra-wide.
No. I mean, so there is a new leak. There's some photo of a guy taking a picture out his window, which also, if you're taking a picture outside of the place that you work, you're probably just dead on giving away who's leaking this. But I digress.
Oh, this is a leak?
I'm assuming. I mean, it's something I've seen. It's so hard for me to keep track of where all these leaks are coming from. But there's a photo of a guy taking a picture of buildings outside his window.
Okay.
And you can see in the corner the little slider in the camera app, and it slid all the way to the right, and it just says 8x on it.
Okay.
So people are now speculating some sort of 8x zoom. I don't know if that's digital zoom on top of it or...
Yeah, if you zoom into 8x, you can zoom into 8x on the iPhone and it'll say 8x, but that's a software zoom from a 2x lens. So yeah. I guess this is just sort of...
People are hoping.
Guessing.
I'm hoping.
I was hoping for an ultra-wide, obviously. But now if it's a telephoto, I hope it's at least 3x.
Yeah, I hope it's something more than just 2x, because we've talked about in the iPhone stuff how the 2x isn't that fun.
I could rant for... I've probably ranted already about this, at least in a video or maybe in a podcast or maybe just Twitter. But you can fake a telephoto with software. You can't really fake an ultra-wide unless you get an ultra-wide lens. They have the ultra-wide on the front, for crying out loud. Like, they know how useful the ultra-wide stuff is, and they're actually one of the first and best to do the ultra-wide on the front. So I'm kind of shocked. That's the thing, is I don't want to keep holding out hope. Like, maybe it is an ultra-wide, because I feel like we kind of know everything about the phone already now, but that's kind of a strange thing for them to choose.
We talked about how two phones, Apple and Google, are the ones without ultra-wide. I fully expected Pixel to have it first, and I hope for Pixel to have it first because we like it so much, but I don't know.
So do you think this is going to be your next phone? Since you've been on Pixel 3 and you haven't experienced higher refresh rates yet, this will be like your first higher refresh rate phone, the natural upgrade from the Pixel 3?
I think it's hard to say no.
Yeah.
It will be.
Okay.
So 90 hertz is also confirmed, I think, since last time we talked. I think it was still a rumor last time we talked about it, but they've gone through settings, so it's definitely 90 hertz. Mm-hmm. 6 gigs of RAM.
Not bad. Not great.
Not bad. It's an upgrade. It's kind of weird because we just learned the iPhone has 4, but like, nobody's really that worried about iPhone RAM numbers. They've proven that they can stick with it.
There's a couple numbers you don't have to spend a lot of time on when it comes to iPhones, and that's battery size, RAM number, and I guess camera megapixel count. Obviously, iOS and their hardware are so well optimized that you can get away with a physically smaller battery when the pipeline is that tightly controlled. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the cameras, and same thing with the RAM. So iPhones just tend to have less RAM and smaller batteries, but they perform pretty well. So yeah, 6 gigs of RAM on an Android phone, not the best number.
Pixel's probably biggest issue with a lot of their phones is just they start slowing down, and we've seen that. And there's a good chance it's the RAM. It's what some of the lowest RAM we see in a lot of the flagship Android phones.
Yeah.
And they seem to be slowing down before a lot of other ones. So if there was a phone I would want more RAM in, it'd probably be Pixel. I'm probably still going to get it anyways because, you know, it works great. We're lucky and we get to use phones a little more. We get to upgrade a little more often here. Yeah. But
I kind of wonder if the one thing we don't know about the Pixel might turn out to be the most important part of it, because it feels weird saying out loud 6 gigs of RAM is not enough in a phone. But the price of the Pixel.
True.
6 gigs of RAM doesn't seem like enough in a $900 phone, right?
No.
Like when you think about like all the cheaper phones that have 12 gigs of RAM and all the other $1,000 phones that have at least 8 gigs of RAM, usually upwards of that, 6 gigs on a $1,000 or $900 phone feels like not enough. But if the Pixel 4, the highest end version, is $700, then does that make it like sting a little less?
Yeah, it makes it sting less. And I mean, ultimately, you're right. If you're paying $900, you want a phone that lasts a long time, and higher RAM is going to be better for that. Yes, yeah. 6 gigs of RAM is plenty for a phone, but like you're future-proofing. You want this phone for arguably 2 years. I think most phone contracts are 2 years, so you want it to be
and maybe kicking for a while. I just hope Android 10 does a better job of RAM management. You would think that a Google-built phone would have that sort of optimization the same way Apple could, and they wouldn't need tons of RAM. And that's kind of what we were hoping with Pixel 3, but it didn't happen. So that's another thing to keep our fingers crossed for.
My other question for you is, it's definitely not going to happen this time, but do you think Pixel needs to start releasing 3A at the same time as the new?
Well,
it's going to be 4A, I'm assuming. So
right. So here's the weird thing about Google's timing with their phones. Because they're coming out in near the end of the year, September, October, they are right at the end of the cycle for phones that are using the latest version of Qualcomm silicon, Snapdragon 855.
Yeah.
This is like the end of the cycle for Snapdragon 855. And then right after Pixel 4 comes out, Snapdragon 865, right, is around the corner. Mm-hmm. So all year we've had these phones with Snapdragon 855, 855 Plus. This one's going to come out, and then boom, it's outdated. So it's kind of this weird spot to release your phone. It doesn't affect others as much because they're earlier in the year. So if they are to do Pixel 4 and Pixel 4a at the same time, I'd want them pushed a little back, like right maybe December, which is kind of late, or maybe pushed forward so that they're not like right about to be outdated. But they are in this sort of a weird pocket in the calendar where it feels like they're just waiting to get outdated instantly.
Yeah, it just feels weird to me that so many people when 3a came out, they're like, Andrew, should I upgrade to the Pixel 3a? It's not an upgrade. It's new, but it's not an upgrade. Yeah. Like I had friends that had the Pixel 3 and asked me if they should get the 3A. No. Like yeah. It's pretty simple, but it just feels like a really weird, why are you releasing the worst model later? And just like along the same lines of why not build all the hype together? Pixel 3A didn't have a lot of hype behind it when it came out. They had some commercials and whatnot, but like why not just put all the hype together so when people are going to Verizon to grab a Pixel, but they don't want to spend, hopefully not $900, but $900, they can get that smaller version. We're seeing iPhone do it now with the XR or just the iPhone 11.
There's a couple other companies that are doing two phone releases that came to mind. That's one of them, iPhone 11 versus iPhone 11 Pro, all at the same time.
Yeah.
Last year, iPhone XR came out a month after iPhone X.
It was all announced at the same time.
It was all announced at the same time, slight difference in launch time. And then there's OnePlus where you have, you know, two things again, sort of staggered during the year. So OnePlus 7 came out a different time from OnePlus 7 Pro. And they have a couple, I think this year they're going to have about a month between them. So there's OnePlus 7T and OnePlus 7T Pro.
Okay.
And just diving right into that, they seem to just be doing the same thing they did last year, where they're slowly confirming things one by one. Those things include both of the phones now will have 90 hertz displays. I think they're going to keep the same stratus between the prices. There's going to be a mid-range priced one and a upper mid-range priced one.
Careful and how you
exactly. Yes, yeah, 669 I think is like upper mid-range. But yeah, they're going to have they showed the design already. They show that there's going to be a matte blue color again. There's going to be a giant camera circle with triple cameras. So they're sort of slowly trickling the same spec leak that people were thinking about with other phones and sort of owning it.
Yeah, that circle leak isn't that what we all thought the 7 was going to be? Do you remember that it was like inside some office looking at a PowerPoint and some guy's holding up this phone with a big black circle on the back of it?
Turns out they were leaking their own OnePlus 7T.
They were two steps ahead of us.
They're just
4D chess.
4D chess, man. 200 IQ stuff out here. they definitely have a lot going for them in the new phones. And I think it'll be interesting to see if there is imagine a 90 hertz display on a OnePlus 7T that's like $500. That's a pretty convincing, you know, Oxygen OS, Snapdragon 855, probably 8 gigs of RAM. Like, you fill out the rest of the spec sheet and it seems like a pretty great deal. We'll have to see how good some of the things like camera and battery turn out. Yeah, but
it's really always that.
That's what it comes down to with OnePlus, I guess, right? How good is the camera? How bad is the camera? How good is the battery? How bad is the battery?
I think it's more, how okay is the camera? And is it...
How passable is the camera?
Yep.
How acceptable
how
is this camera?
Everyone wants their camera to be rated as passable, acceptable.
I don't know if it'll be a spectacular camera, but, you know, we'll see how they do. All right, well, that's a lot of leak talk. Let's get back to present time. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll go ahead and do some Q&A.
This week on The Pitch, it's tween time.
We're redefining feminine hygiene for tweens.
You've done 5 million sales. You did 3 million last year. Very impressive.
Thank you.
I really believe in this category. I'm an investor in a company called AmpFloat.
And similarly, I'm a personal investor in Ruby Love.
Like Elizabeth and Charles, I have seen a lot of these companies. Mm-hmm. I've never made an investment in the space. You should be raising more than $500,000.
As a Black woman, for me to come on here and say, I'm going to become the new Always, that's super audacious. And I could
Love
we,
Always.
For sure.
What makes it audacious?
Yeah,
it
let's do it. Let's
do it. That's what I wanted to hear.
I get the sense back her experience might have been a little different.
Save the mic.
That looked really expensive.
This week on The Pitch, Monica Williams drops the mic. Go right now and subscribe to The Pitch, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Everywhere you look, people seem to be worried that kids are suffering an unprecedented mental health crisis and that smartphones and social media are to blame. But how accurate is this belief?
It is a compelling narrative because it allows you to think as a parent, like, oh, it's not me or choices I'm making, it's this thing that has reached out and affected my child.
I'm Taylor Lorenz, and this week on Power User, we're talking about the moral panic around kids and technology and what we can all do to actually help children. It's not what you think.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brené Brown, and this is Unlocking Us. In this podcast, we'll explore ideas, stories, experiences, research, books, films, music, anything that reflects the universal experiences of being human, from the bravest moments to our most broken-hearted moments. Some episodes will be conversations with the people who are teaching me, challenging me, confusing me, maybe ticking me off a little bit. And some days I'll just talk directly to you about what I'm learning and how it's changing the way I think and feel. The first episodes are out now. We're going to do 3 or 4 part series every quarter, so about 12 to 15 episodes a year. Unlocking Us will always drop on Wednesdays. And now you can find me wherever you normally listen to your podcasts. You can get new episodes as soon as they are published by following Unlocking Us on your favorite podcast app. And as always, stay awkward, brave, and kind.
All right, so we have a couple different questions about 5G. One of them at the top here is how long will it take for 5G to roll out in most cities in the world? Other people wondering about just generally, why doesn't the new iPhone have 5G? Will the Pixel have 5G? Will these new phones have 5G, etc.? If you watched our 5G explain video, you'll kind of know it's not ready yet.
Like, not
it's
close.
Even if you were to get a 5G phone today, which you can, I did, it wouldn't be the best 5G experience. You'd mainly be on 4G all the time, and by the time you did get on 5G, for those like 9 seconds of your day you walk past the tower, what are you downloading? If you happen to be downloading something at that point, it'll be great, but 5G is not ready yet. So I am not shocked that the new iPhone doesn't have 5G. I wouldn't expect the 2020 iPhone to have 5G.
I don't think so.
As much as I'm expecting from that phone, I don't think 5G is one of those things.
Yeah, and I feel like some people's argument is, well, I'm buying 5G now. 5G is going to be back soon.
Right, okay.
I don't know. Also, if you're the kind of person who's that excited for 5G, I bet you you're upgrading your phone before 5G actually becomes mainstream.
That's exactly true. And the other thing is people don't buy their phones based on what they think might be a thing in 2 or 3 years. They buy the phone they want now. I want to take good pictures. What takes good pictures now? Because you can always wait for the next great phone to have, you know, better camera. So if you just want to take the best camera you have right now, you just pick the best camera you have right now, and then you buy the phone with it.
Yeah, you don't need the iPhone 11 right now. Slophies will be cool in 2 years, and I'm sure everything else will have them.
That's the thing, is you're kind of right. That's actually going to be a feature in like all the newest Android phones. No, I don't think 5G is super critical at the moment. And in the next 2 years, we'll start to see if it can roll out faster than it has. But I wouldn't cross my fingers for like a OnePlus 7 or a Pixel 4 with 5G. Don't need it.
And if it has it, you won't be using it?
Yeah.
I know you typically prefer Android to iOS. Is there anything that Apple could change about their software that would get you to prefer it?
Interesting. Well, there's a bunch of customization stuff right off the bat. I love my widgets. Mm-hmm. I love me some custom icon packs, all that sort of fun stuff. So that would instantly give it the edge that it has not had for a very long time. And then I guess generally the ability to have different hardware choice. I think a lot of what I prefer about Android isn't just the software, but it's that you can pick between like 100 phones instead of 3. So if you feel like you're cool with iOS, then that's great. But you have really, you know, 3 or 4 phones to pick from right now. iPhone 11, 11 Pro, 11 Pro Max, 10R, 10. I guess that's it. So
that's
you don't get a whole ton of choice. Meanwhile, I'm over here like, well, I want a high refresh rate. I don't care as much about the battery because I can fast charge. I do want wireless charging. I don't care as much about waterproofing. And I'm going down the tree of like 70 different phones I can pick from. I don't think that's something that Apple will just decide to do, is make 70 different phone options. But yeah, I think those main little things of customization to make the phone look and feel and act exactly the way I want it, especially in the UI, is something that I would love to see.
That's exactly how I feel, in the sense of I cannot stand seeing iPhones with the 50 buttons on the front. Like if you look at my phone right now, it's completely clean. I think there's 5 icons. Most of them are folders and then app drawer. Like, I just want my home screen to be completely clean. It has a clock. It has a nice looking background. Notifications at the top. A couple buttons on the bottom.
I went through a phase on Android, and this was a couple years ago, where I had a wallpaper that had like some cool designs on it, and I had absolutely no icons on my home screen. But I had invisible widgets over certain areas of the wallpaper, where if I pressed like the head of the snake, it would open the camera. Like I had all these setups. Like I had the cleanest Android setup, man. It was super, super minimal. I remember a certain one I had very vividly. It was black and yellow. And at the bottom, it had a text box that just said phone in text. It wasn't an icon. It was just part of the wallpaper. And I had a little invisible, you know, widget over there. I just tapped the phone text and just opened the phone. I don't know, something about that. You can't really do that on an iPhone. So the customization is real. Okay, I have one from Orchestra. How long do you think it will take for foldable technology to really mature to be normal and mainstream? And this is if you look at the current first generation, I need a trajectory. I need a first gen and a second gen to like extrapolate and go forward. So right now, all I have is your first gen Huawei Mate X, your first gen Galaxy Fold, and your first gen... what is it called?
Royal
FlexPi to judge from. And if I'm just looking at that, it doesn't seem like a very fast, like next year it'll be ready to go. Like it doesn't seem like it's going to go that quickly. Maybe kind of like 5G. I might have made that exact parallel in the video. 5G is like a folding phone. But I do think in maybe, let's give it a, let me put a number on it. Let me say in 4 generations. Galaxy Fold 4.
Galaxy Fold 4 is mainstream folding technology.
Galaxy Fold 4 is no longer an exuberant price, and it is worthy of considering a main phone for a lot of people.
So around 2023, if you're assuming.
I think I'm pretty optimistic about this, but I think, yeah, that would be a pretty great trajectory for folding phones. I think worst case scenario, probably more like 8-9 years before anyone, or it'll just die like modular phones, which is, that's a sad future.
I don't think it's
going to
die. I see it being somehow incorporated into the future.
Okay. Yeah. No, I think it's much more, they both had the same, I think modular phones and folding phones have the same like positive possible outcome, but I think folding phones are much more reasonable to assume that you can attempt it and make money from it, while modular phones were a, kind of a scrambled business model and a difficult thing to expect one company to do well. So I think folding phones do have that future.
So here's my, I like agree with you. I think it's going to take a long time, but then that's also how I felt about in-display fingerprint sensors. And
okay.
That blew onto the scene way, way quicker than I thought it was going to be. I remember doing the Vivo Next.
It was the Next 21.
It was Vivo X21, then the Vivo Next, right?
Yeah.
And that was not great. Slow.
Very deliberate, like press on the screen for it to work. How many years ago was that? 2 years?
I don't even think that
3 years
two.
Ago? Not what, even?
No. It definitely wasn't 3 years ago.
I did a video of like a durability test of a fingerprint scanner, and that was like basically the first scanner to be built into a retail phone. That was a Vivo phone. What year was that?
1 year ago was the unboxing.
That was 1 year ago?
Oh, wait.
Or less than 2 years ago, probably a year and change. Yeah. February 2018, I see, is when that video came out of when we went to that hotel and like actually used the in-display fingerprint reader for the first time. That's February.
Oh, I wasn't there for that.
February of 2018.
Okay.
That is less than 2 years ago, and that's
good.
It's gotten pretty impressive.
We're getting to the point where they're now not just like very fast and in a lot of phones, but they're expanding so you have bigger areas on the screen.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah.
I would love to see, and I think this is the general path of the advancement, and there was even a prototype phone that did this, but of like a large area on the bottom of the phone. So I don't have to land it on the exact like spot in the middle of the icon every time. I don't have to memorize that placement. It'll kind of become muscle memory of just like touching somewhere on the bottom third of the phone, and the fingerprint sensor is big enough to just read your finger in high resolution anywhere you put it. That's the dream of the future. I think that's an expensive part still. It's a,
for sure.
It's literally a CMOS sensor, I think, at this point. So still pretty tough. I don't know if ultrasonic is going to have that same possibility. We'll see. But yeah, you're right. The acceleration of in-display fingerprint readers is optimistic.
Yeah, I feel like you would have had a similar answer if in February 2018 someone said, where do you see in-display fingerprint sensors becoming a mainstream?
Interesting. I obviously can't look backwards in time, but if you asked me after that 2018 video, where do you see this going forward? I think I probably would have said like in 5 years, all the phones will have this.
We're almost there.
It's 2 years in and we're kind of at like almost saturation for in-display fingerprint readers. A couple more phones left to go, notably the iPhone and the Pixel, but we're close. Oh, here's another question from Adrian Sorbo. Does your team know what the K stands for?
Yes.
And that's where that ends. Also, the same person, I think, asked, how does the Pixel compare with the Note? Not a creep, just someone that's watched your streams, in parentheses.
Yeah, I know. I remember, Adrian. I haven't streamed in forever, and I don't really plan on doing it anytime soon, but how does it compare? I loved my Note 8. Right. One thing I'm still surprised about with my Note 8 is I didn't put a case on that. That's got to be easily the most breakable phone I've ever owned. Didn't put a case on it.
Glass sandwich.
Just had a skin on it, and it survived. I've never been more proud. And then the minute I got my Pixel 3, I'm like, no way I can do this again for another year.
That's another
fragile
phone.
Put a case on it instantly. Biggest difference, obviously, is the camera. I run Mac's Instagram account. That's my real full-time job. MKBHD is second. So
nice.
I need to have a better camera. So Pixel really brought it up there. If you're not following Mac, also, I don't think I've ever mentioned in this podcast
Mac's full-time
we haven't talked about Mac at all. Mac is the dog. If you're not aware, he's been in lots of our videos. His Instagram handle is pictures of Mac.
Yep.
I spend a lot of time on it. People always are like, he's so photogenic. He's not. He's really not. He's adorable.
He's a good looking dog, you know, generally. Yeah,
but it takes a lot of effort to get a good picture of him.
Oh, I see.
And if you see those camera tests that we post on our videos, there's a lot of treats being given out behind them. So he's fattening up a bit.
Have you noticed at all a difference between like on the Instagram account of note photos versus pixel photos?
I bet if I went back, you could tell specifically. And I mean, it's a year difference. It was Note 8 and then I hopped to Pixel 3. So it's kind of like how everyone right now is comparing iPhone 11 to Pixel 3. I saw this great meme of like these two guys running and it's just like the iPhone 11's on one side looking all sweaty and there's this guy just busting ass behind him and it's just like Pixel 4 saying look ahead on your left and about to pass him. So yeah. It's hard to compare the two. I totally miss the screen. I think I would say Pixel, or I was thinking of this recently, Note 9 might be my favorite looking phone because it has no notch, the bezels don't upset me at all.
Sure.
The screen's incredible.
That's honestly the number one thing I always miss when I leave a note is just the form factor and the display and the awesome color of it. Even if it's not high refresh rate, it just looks incredible.
Yeah.
So Pixel, best advantage of it was the camera. Biggest thing you're missing is the screen.
Yeah. Actually, I really do like all the swipe gestures and stuff that they added, the taking away back button and stuff. I've gotten really used to that and I really enjoy it. So I think I'm going to keep going Pixel until they upset me. Maybe 6 gigs of RAM upsets me, but I have a feeling I'll just be a Pixel for a while. Oh, wait, actually, I don't like the forehead on Pixel 4.
Now that I've seen it more in detail in the videos, it's looking pretty bad, that big forehead.
I'll get used to it. I got used to this terrible notch that is the Pixel 3, but it's one of those things where, like, you can get used to it, that's fine, but that doesn't mean I have to admit it looks good. I don't think it looks good.
It's kind of the same as like the iPhone back. And there's also, I think, something to like seeing something in a video or photo versus holding it in your hand where it's like made of glass and you feel the weight of it. And there's just something about that that makes it more tangible. But yeah, it doesn't look great.
No, not at all. Just had to throw that out there. We didn't talk about that in the Pixel leaks before, but big forehead, no chin, no bueno.
Someone named Lambest Meme asked, what phone would you rather see a higher refresh rate on, the 2020 Galaxy devices or the 2020 iOS devices? I'm going to rephrase that. I'm going to say, if you were betting,
okay,
who do you think would first embrace a higher refresh rate screen, the iPhone or the Samsung phone? I have an answer. I have an answer.
I have like a reason why both of them would do it.
I'd be curious to hear your reason for Apple. My reason is Samsung for sure. Mm-hmm. And my reason is Samsung already physically makes high refresh rate OLED displays for other companies' phones.
So it's funny because that's sort of my answer for the iPhone, is they already have the iPad Pro that has a higher refresh rate.
Right. But then the other argument is the new iPhone doesn't come till next September, and we're going to get two new Samsung flagships between now and then. So even if the 2020 iPhone does have a higher refresh rate, which I really hope it does, they should be a Note 11 and an S11 between now and then, and those both have a shot at higher refresh rate. And I'm pretty sure they could pull one of those off.
Let's just hope both of them have it.
Let's just hope they all have it, and we don't have to have an argument about them. But yeah, those are the last two holdouts, it seems, in the super high-end $1,000 phone camp. And I'm hoping they both just get on the train.
I know someone from one of those companies is listening to this. Just put the damn...
Just go ahead and do it.
Please.
Just go ahead.
Okay. Favorite car that's not a Tesla. Let's go favorite car that's not Tesla. And is it EV? I want to hear a non-EV answer.
Right. My answer is stupid. My answer is really dumb.
Okay.
Okay, and this is like... None of this is relatable at all because the only cars I've ever driven are a Toyota Camry Hybrid that I owned before this, a Tesla Model S P100D, an Acura NSX supercar, and a McLaren 720S. Those are the cars that I've driven for more than a week. personally. Mm-hmm. So my favorite non-Tesla is a McLaren 720S. That's such a stupid answer.
It's favorite car. We're not saying.
Yeah, it's not like I would rather drive that right now if the Tesla didn't exist. That's not what I would pick, obviously. But that is my favorite non-Tesla that I've driven, for sure.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So I'm a little different. I drive a Subaru Impreza because I love its all-wheel drive. I've really grown to like Subaru a lot. Definitely for a while, like an STI is my dream car, was my dream car. Was my dream car. I think the STI is like my reasonable dream car. It's expensive, but it's not like, it's not a 720S. I have to say though, like if I had to go dream car, I really enjoyed that NSX we drove. Probably because of it still drove like a regular car when you wanted it to. Like,
you know, it's funny.
It didn't feel like
it had like almost the same steering wheel as that Acura MDX, big car that I guess basically borrowed when my car was being fixed. But yeah, all wheel drive. That was a very drivable two door.
Yeah, it felt normal, like driving it around when you weren't pushing it to its limits. Like you drove it around on a track, but driving it, I got to drive it to and from the track, which was way too much fun. And yeah, it just drove really, really nicely. Whereas a 720S, as cool as it is, like I can't imagine it's terrifying. Fun to like hit parking lots or speed bumps or stuff like that.
There's another thing though. It is kind of actually better than normal. This is all incredibly not relatable, but we drove the Lamborghini Aventador LP400 or something, whatever it's called, for a couple days when we were in Palm Beach for a video about it for Autofocus. That car is legitimately annoying to drive. It is not fun. If you're going around at like normal speeds in first and second gear and you like try to like tap on the gas to go forward, it like lurches you. And then like you slow back down and it lurches you forward. Trying to reverse and like do a K-turn in that car, it's just not fun.
No.
I guess K-turns aren't fun, but whatever. Like you get the idea. It's not a great experience. So the McLaren by comparison was very drivable. I will say that. Like the typical first gear like lurching was not happening.
Okay.
It was much smoother. I could do K-turns and reverses, and I'm just throwing it back and forth. And like as a daily car, got into my driveway, it was like a reasonable drive.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that step between the Aventador, which I guess is, I have driven that too. That car was stupid, man. And the McLaren 720S, that's pretty sweet. I'll throw one more thing out there. McLaren makes a couple different GT cars and the McLaren 570 GT. Before I got my Tesla, when we were, I guess, making a video back in the day when we were trying to make a video with the Karma, actually.
Okay.
And we went down and they had that garage full of McLarens and there was like a P1. We just kicked the tires of a giant, like, $1 million supercar collection. And I sat down in a McLaren 570 GT and he was like, you know, you could walk out of here with this car right now. And for a minute there, I was like, yeah, I could. I kind of want
to fire Andrew and he'd have to walk.
I'd have to make some serious choices about how much storage. Yeah. But that car, the McLaren 570 GT specifically, I've watched a lot of videos about, and it's kind of a fascinating car. It's like a nice little two-door drivable. They call it the daily supercar.
I think McLaren hands down are the best looking supercars out there. I'm sure a lot of people will be very upset with that, but Lamborghini looks cool. Too rigid and
at the risk of getting way into the weeds, I loved the P1, which is their high-end one from a couple years ago, and then I really don't like the look of the Senna, which replaced it. So the P1,
okay,
was a hybrid supercar that was just, if you guys haven't seen a P1, go ahead and right now just look up matte black P1, just put those words into Google, switch to images, and just scroll for a little bit and enjoy the masterpiece that is the P1. The Senna came out after that, not a great looking car, also $1 million. Would never want one. It's a $1 million car that I would never want. It's that ugly. So they have their hits and misses as far as supercar looks, but I will agree they're pretty generally great looking.
Cool. So we just both sound like
So 15 minutes of talking about supercars later, my favorite car that's not a Tesla is a McLaren 720S.
Sick.
I have one from Matej Svancer who asks, what do you shoot first for a normal review, A-roll or B-roll? And I'm gonna say it's usually B-roll.
Almost always
B-roll. If you ever wonder about the behind the scenes process of making a video, that might be worth its own entire podcast, maybe
for
a
sure.
whole video.
That might be a good
like
one
that.
To bring Vin and Brandon in.
Definitely. Yeah, actually great idea. But as of right now, yeah, we were shooting today, as of the recording of this, a whole bunch of B-roll for something that we haven't shot the A-roll for yet. So that's a pretty common thing. Mainly because I'm still tweaking the things I want to say about it and adding little bits of findings and pieces here and there. So once we do actually finalize the A-roll, then everything can just get edited together quickly and seamlessly. Mm-hmm. So,
and speaking of like special episodes kind of like that, it's something we've discussed about a lot since we've been talking about the podcast for a long time. We have a list of some really fun episodes we want to do. We just launched this in the midst of the crazy
podcast. Topics are a whole whiteboard thing we've got going on right now, and as of right now it's just like new tech, like things are just coming out left and right, and so that's naturally what we're talking about. But I think once we calm down a little bit and we get back into like the Januaries, and I mean we're probably gonna have a CES episode. That's kind of a mandatory thing, right?
Yeah,
just get everybody in here in the hotel room on the mic. Yeah, that's gonna be fun. But once we calm down a little bit, we'll have some more introspective, some more fun, collaborative, all sorts of other sort of types of episodes like that. But I'm excited for that.
I really can't wait. I've seen a couple of people like, oh, I see phones on the channel all the time, like I want the podcast to be more, and it's gonna be.
Yeah,
we just launched it right in the middle of phone season, so like today's episode there's gonna be some phone stuff to start.
Great timing. Like when we get in the retro tech stuff, we get into all the new camera gear, we get into all the new behind the scenes, we get into the interview stuff. It's going to be good. So I feel like that's a good place to end it.
That's
just
a great
on
place,
talking
yeah.
about the podcast in general. But look, we're at episode 5 right now, which seems like a high number, but also a low number. We just started, so 5 is a pretty good place to be. But 5 is such a low number in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
So definitely looking for your feedback as usual. And if you want to tweet us at WVFRM, you can do that. And if you want to listen, if you want to leave a rating on Apple Podcasts, that's welcome as well. And an honest one. If you want to give us 5 stars, if you want to tell us what we can do better, that'd be dope.
Yeah, definitely an honest one. I actually have a challenge for the fans here.
You have a challenge?
A challenge.
Okay.
So we're at 2,500 ratings on Apple Podcasts right now.
That's amazing.
I read them after every episode, by the way. If we can get to 5,000 ratings, and I'm not asking you to do 5 stars, I'm not asking for a good rating, a nice, honest rating.
Okay.
If we get to 5,000, I will do the Q&A of the next episode, Hot One style.
You want to do, does that mean you're going to like make wings and
I will make, I will cook wings.
Spicy
I will,
food.
We have plenty of hot sauce over
we
there.
We do actually
I'm
have
sure
the last
we
dab.
Can do it. We maybe not 10, maybe we'll do 5 and just start right in the middle.
Oh my God.
I'll do it.
You'll do it.
I've been kind of wanting to.
Are you peer pressuring me into doing
I'm
it
I'm not
too?
Peer pressuring you, but just like they're not peer pressuring last dab onto everyone. It sounds like you might.
You don't have to if you don't want to, Marquez, but.
Well, I'll judge you.
I'll just go in with you on that. Fine.
You'll go in?
So 5,000 ratings on Apple Podcasts sounds like a good target. And if that happens, then we will be burning our faces off.
Yeah.
All right. I'm down. Sounds good. All right. Well, we'll look forward to that. We'll see if it happens. Either way, until the next one, thanks for listening. That's been it from us.
Waveform is produced in production with Studio 71, and our intro outro song is created by Cameron Barlow.